You are now listening to this week's Not So Famous Sports Reporters podcast with your hosts, Austin Klein and Nicholas Jarvin.
Today is Friday, December 12th, and we would like to welcome you back to the Not So Famous Sports Reporters podcast.
A lot's happened since the last podcast to us and in the world of sports.
It's been a few weeks since we did our last podcast. Last week we had some stuff going on. But we're back this week bringing you the 11th Not So Famous Sports Reporters podcast. So we're going to jump right into it. We hope you enjoy it. Alright guys, so like I said, we're going to jump right into it this week. This week, rather than having an opening question, we're actually just going to have like a little opening segment. Nick and I attended the Lions game. They defeated the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 34-17 last Sunday.
Yeah,
at Ford Field, of course. So that was a good game. We enjoyed it. It was my first Lions game, so
my fifth one.
Good time.
They actually have a winning record when I go 3-2. So that's interesting. It's actually a funny story for y'all. It's the first time I've seen a Lions game that didn't feature Lions and Vikings since I was probably 7 or 8. Because the last three they played the Vikings I went to, there's a little bit of side story to that, but we won't get into it. But they're 3-2 and I go now, on my personal note. So I guess I'm a good luck charm for the Lions. Because my record compares very well to their overall record in the time frame I've been alive to when I go. So, the game was pretty good though. We sat in the second level of Ford Field, and it's just an awesome field. There's not a bad seat really in the place, except if you sit in the absolute worst section, but every place has, you know, one bad section. But I sat in a few different places and I've liked every view. But we had good seats and we got to see Calvin Johnson go off. It was pretty fun. And the Lions really impressed us. I mean, they should have, they're playing the Bucks, but you know, they lost to the Bucks the year before, and it was you know, a game that they pretty much had to win. You know, they, every game from here on out is pretty much a must win, besides maybe the final game of the year for them to make the playoffs. So they really got to beat Minnesota and Chicago these next 2 weeks now. But they looked really impressive against the Bucks. Stafford looked really good. The only negative thing I could say was they really didn't get the run game going. Bell ended up with like close to 80 yards ish.
Well, it was actually their first. Game with over 100 yards rushing as a team.
So. Yeah, but that was they got a bunch of 2 or 3 yard gains, and then the big thing was Bell rushed for almost 60 yards on one play. So that was their big running
in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
correct. Yeah,
to pretty much seal. I mean, the game was pretty much already sealed. But that pretty much all but assured no miracle would happen. So Calvin Johnson was definitely my MVP watching that game. He was pretty amazing. But I must say, Mike Evans, watching him, it seems like I could look back in a few years when he's a superstar and say, wow, I got to see Mike Evans play. Because he did some really impressive stuff. And the top play of the game was definitely when Glover Quinn, on his butt, caught that interception. He made a really good play. And football players sometimes have trouble bringing the ball in when it deflects and stuff. Because it can take some crazy bounces, because it's, you know, not a round ball, so the physics of it are a little weird, but he, you know, it bounced right to him, and he was able to hold on and make a pretty good catch.
Yeah, and you know, you guys don't know this, but Glover Quinn is my favorite player on the Lions, so it's definitely neat seeing him continue his great season. He's in second in the league for interceptions this year now, so that was nice. That ball was intended for Mike Evans when Quinn, it was, I don't know if it was deflected or if it, I can't remember if it was,
put up in the air. Somebody
like slid through
deflected.
His hands.
Yeah.
It was intended for Mike Evans. Glover Quinn made a nice play. I think that was a good turning point too, because that gave the Lions another chance to score before halftime.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that was scary too was when a header ball intercepted it in the end zone. And you take it either because you really had nowhere to go, and then you got popped at the 7 yard line. The ball popped out. And then there was a penalty, so the Bucs had like 10 or 11 plays inside the Lions' 10-yard line to score, and they eventually, it took them like a long time, it was like 9 or 10 plays, but they eventually scored. I mean, the Bucs, they looked every bit like a 2-11 team to me, but the Lions got to stop making those mistakes, because you can't, you got to just take a knee there, because if you're playing the Packers in last game of the year, that's going to hurt you a lot more than it would have, you know, in this game. But the Lions overall looked really good, really impressive, and they're not looking like the Lions of old. Caldwell's gotten kind of lucky, I think, because I think the penalties are still around the same amount. But Caldwell, I think, has been playing better football than Schwartz did overall, so I think that he's a little bit of a difference maker. And just Stafford, you know, is really coming into his own this year. He doesn't have impressive stats like he did in 2011, but he's doing a solid job and he's winning games. And Calvin Johnson now coming back healthy, they're looking like a scary team. And like I said a few shows ago, it doesn't look like there's one real dominant team in the NFL this year. Maybe the Patriots, but they had a really bad start. Throughout the year, from start to finish, there hasn't been that one team that's just like, wow, they're dominant, like the Broncos and Seahawks both were last year. So Lions could slip into the Super Bowl. You never know. If they get that 5 seed, it's important that they try and get that 5 seed, though, because that's almost a guaranteed victory. They're going to be playing possibly a 10-loss team in the first round. So obviously their goal is still to win the division. They'd have to win out to do that. But it's still possible for them. The Lions are pretty much, it's weird to say, but they're in control of their own destiny, because if they win out and the Packers win out, I think that means that they tie, because they, or the Packers can't win out. So if they win out and then the Packers win out until the last game is what I'm meaning to say here, and then the Lions beat them in the last game, the Lions win the division. So really, in an odd sense, even though they're a game behind, the Lions control their own destiny because they have that almost game edge for the division, because they beat the Packers when they came to Ford Field. But overall, impressive. There are those few mistakes, but the Bucks, of course, they're 2-11, so they made more mistakes, and the Lions looked good overall, is my summary. It looked good live. It looked like a good product.
Yeah, I agree. The Lions looked very well. Defense continued on pace as the number one points. The number one defense in points allowed, that's the main stat they use. The rushing defense is number one. Passing defense, I believe it's ninth now. After last week.
That's expected, though. Slay didn't look impressive. You were telling me that.
The points allowed, they right on pace with their 17 average. A very good showing by Lions defense. And like we said, the Lions offense looked well, or Lions offense looked good. Although it was against the Buccaneers. But as long as you're scoring points, you know, they had a two-game stretch where they didn't score a touchdown, so.
Yeah, this weekend against Minnesota, I fully expect them to do the same thing. The real test is going to be when they go on the road, so I think they'll get their 10th win this weekend.
Yeah, so like we were saying, guys, we had a great time at the Lions game. If you live in Michigan, you're a Lions fan, you want to catch your game, one game left this Sunday at Ford Field. They play the Vikings. It's going to be at 4:25, so. Yep, so we're going to move on now. I'd like to talk about this thing I found. It's on ESPN.com. It's called the NFL Playoff Machine. And basically, you go through the three remaining weeks of the NFL schedule, pick which team you think is going to win every matchup, and then it puts together the playoff picture, like what it would be. It takes together all the tiebreakers, of course, except for like the last couple tiebreakers, like points for, point differential, stuff like that, because we don't know those results. So if you go on there right when you hear this podcast, you can pick every game from week 15, 16, 17, of course, except for the Thursday Night Football game played last night. That's already chosen for you. So me and Nick went through, pretty much agreed on all the picks, except for one. We'll tell you in a few minutes. And in the AFC, it looks like it's going to be New England, the 1 seed, Denver, the 2 seed. And then the 3 seed and the 6 seed will play on Wild Card Weekend. It's going to be Indianapolis hosting San Diego in that game. And then the 4 seed, Pittsburgh, hosting the 5 seed, Baltimore, in the second wildcard game in the AFC. And then in the NFC, 1 seed, Green Bay, 2 seed, Seattle, 3 seed, hosting our Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions would go to Philly. And then the 4 seed, Atlanta, which is horrid, but we have them going 7-9, so not as hard as we once thought it would look like. Arizona is going to Atlanta to play the Falcons. So there you have it. There's a couple things that could change this. The NFC would be changed pretty good if the Lions do in fact go to Lambeau and defeat Green Bay. If the Lions go to Lambeau and defeat Green Bay, then the Lions change places with
Green Bay as the one seed.
Green Bay. And that would have, well, not completely change places. Anyway, if the Lions beat Green Bay in Lambeau week 17, that would give Detroit the first round bye and Seattle the other first round bye. And then Atlanta would play Green Bay, which is actually really funny because Green Bay would be 12-4 and Atlanta 7-9, and the game would be in Atlanta. So
it's interesting.
That's how that's going to break down. If you want to go on there, try it. It's ESPN.go.com/NFL playoff machine. Let us know what you find out. If there's any interesting playoff, you know, playoff deciding games you want to get our opinion on, I'm glad to answer them. I guess now would be a good time to tell you our Twitter. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it's @NSFSportsReport. Email nsfsportsreporters@gmail.com. And our website is up. There's not much on it yet, but as the winter months come in and snow, we get snowed in our house up here in the lovely state of Michigan, we'll try to be posting a little bit more, give you guys some more content. And that is the URL is nsfsportsreporters.wordpress.com. So, once again, the easiest way to get a hold of us is Twitter. You both have that Twitter account linked to our phones. We will follow you back. You can DM us questions. And if you do that, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. So, we do appreciate the few listeners we have, and we'd like to reward you a little bit. So, moving on to some MLB transactions right now. This is good stuff going on in the winter meetings right now. Yesterday was a big day. A lot of moves. So Nick and I are going to break those down for you coming up right now.
All right. The Tigers made a few trades since last time we've done a podcast. The first one was pre-winter meetings. We've talked about the Ghost trade. That was like pre-winter meetings. That was almost or towards the beginning of the winter, or fall, I guess, but the hot stove. And that was the same day they re-signed Victor, which I agreed with both moves. But they were involved with a three-way trade, and I'm going to give you analysis on these Tiger trades, like really in-depth, because, of course, that's the team we follow the most, so I'm going to tell you if I like them or not. But the three-team deal was D.D. Gregorius went from Arizona to the New York Yankees. And then the Tigers, in turn, supplied Robbie Ray and Domingo Leyva to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the Tigers got Shane Green from the Yankees. Okay, so I'm going to go through this whole deal for each team. First of all, the Yankees got a shortstop in D.D. Gregorius. And people are going to look at it and go, wow, he has bad numbers. And you know, go with that. But actually, if you look, Gregorius's numbers have offensively have been just as good as Jeter's the past few years, like all around almost, the past 2 years. And then, like, even his percentages, because, of course, Jeter was hurt most of 2013. And then Gregorius, of course, is, like, a lot better than Jeter defensively. Jeter was the worst defensive shortstop since 2003, I think I read. And the Twitter account, I look at this guy named Mark Simon, he's from ESPN, and he puts out some interesting stats, a lot of defensive stats for baseball, because there's some organizations like Baseball Info Solutions that watch plays, and will have a good play, bad play ratio. They judge them based on a certain criteria. And then there's like defensive run saves and stuff, and he makes graphs and such, and will put them in tables. So I looked at that, and Jeter was the worst, so I think Gregorius is an all-around upgrade for the Yankees, even if he doesn't hit well. And I think Gregorius has to know, kind of like with the Tigers, he's there for defense. Like Jose Iglesias is probably going to hit ninth. Whatever you can contribute at the bottom of the order, hopefully you hit 260 and you can get on base a few times and be a table setter. But that's the big thing they're going to want him to do. And I think that was a fine acquisition by the Yankees, but Green might have been a little bit of a price to pay. And then going with the Tigers, the prospects that the Tigers gave the Diamondbacks, Leyva, me and Austin got to watch him play. I'll let Austin give his take on this in a second, because He'll give you his take on Green and the two prospects, because I think he has a take on all three of those players. But Leyva, I liked. Baseball America rates him really, really high, and I've read a lot of other places like Baseball Prospectus and such, and Tiger guys that we follow, that follow him pretty good, you know, think that Baseball America might have overrated Leyva a little bit. But they say that, you know, he's kind of a, he's got a good ceiling, but it's more likely he doesn't reach it. But I like Leyva as a good raw hitter. He has a little bit of power. People say his power lacks, but I think he has a little bit of pop. I think he could hit like 10 homers a year, which is okay for a middle of the road team. He could start at second base. I think he's going to end up at second base rather than shortstop. He's played both positions. He really impressed when we went to West Michigan, though. He was a guy I was always trying to get video of, because I thought he was one of their better hitting prospects. So it's sad to see him go, but it's good for his career. The Tigers didn't really need him because he was blocked by Kinsler and Iglesias. And then they have other guys like Javier Betancourt and Hernan Perez and Harold Castro and Dixon Machado all ahead of him in the minors. And, you know, they got some lower-level guys. So Leyva probably would have never really got a chance. He was probably a trade chip from the beginning. But overall, you know, that's what you got to do. Sometimes your prospects come up and sometimes you use them in trades. You know, there's a happy medium for that. I mean, to build a team, you got to be able to make trades, good signings, drafts. Well, it's just a combination, you know, good international free agents. So I think Leyva is a good example of that. And then the Tigers also gave up Robbie Ray. And the interesting thing is Green, I think, is almost like what Doug Fister was when the Tigers got Fister. You know, kind of an underrated guy. He had a decent year. And then Fister, you know, he kind of got undervalued because in 2011, with his one loss record, people still valued that a lot more at the time, I think, which was kind of silly because, you know, you can give up one run a game and lose it. But, and he had the worst run support at the time. But Fister, you know, he was traded for Robbie Ray, and Robbie Ray got Green. And I think, you know, Dave Dombrowski kind of almost rewrote his mistake and got a really good guy who can be the Tigers' number four even this year. I think he could become a really good number four guy. Brandon McCarthy, baseball player, he just signed with the Dodgers. He pitched with, was teammates with Green for half the year last year, and he said that Green has some of the top stuff he's ever seen. And Green's been, you know, he didn't have much minor league success, but he's kind of a work in progress. Interesting story real quick. I know I'm taking a lot of time on this deal, but Green, he had a scholarship coming out of high school, hurt his arm, ended up at Daytona Beach Community College, which I wouldn't be, you know, arguing with that. That's a nice place to go to a college, a community college if you have to go. But he was rehabbing, and I'm pretty sure, like, a Yankee scout was there, and they discovered him and ended up signing him, and he got his velocity up to 92, 93, and he started developing some really good pitches. So he's almost just kind of a late bloomer because he's blooming right now, but I think he could give the Tigers five really good years if they hold on to him for all 5 years. And I think he's going to end up being more than a four-starter, but he'll be the four-starter here, and I think he's going to do a really good job in Detroit. So I'm really happy with that trade altogether. Now, do you have anything to say about Green and Ray? Because I know you had opinions on Ray and Leyva.
Yeah, I remember the first time I watched Shane Green pitch. Well, it might not have been the first time, but I remember the first time that I remember his name. A lot of you might have been watching this game. It was a Sunday. It's like a Sunday afternoon baseball game, and that's the game he had three errors in one game. He had two throws over the first baseman's head, and one ball he just could not get a hold of. But that's just the way I remember him. But yeah, he's
kind of unlucky.
Good pitcher with good stuff. He pitched an 8-inning shutout against the Tigers.
Yeah, and so I'm going to interrupt you for a second. He pitched twice against Tigers in August, and the first one I watched on TV. The second one, I wanted to see Price, and it was Jeter's last time in Detroit, so I went to that game, and the Tigers lost 8-4. They got blown out because Price let 9 straight guys on base. But Green was actually on the other end, and Victor hit a homer that game, and they got another run off of him in 7 innings. But, geez, I remember hoping that he'd get out of the game so the Tigers could score some runs. He just was really impressive. I think he even struck out Victor that game, which was a pretty impressive feat because, you know, Victor's kind of like a Polanco type. He doesn't strike out very often. So, yeah, I saw that game, and he was impressive. So you can continue. I'm sorry for that.
Shane Green, although he only pitched, he pitched 7 to 8 innings in the major leagues last year, but he gets a good amount of strikeouts. He has over 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. So
yeah, and if you take out his two worst games, his ERA was actually under 3. So, I mean, I know you can't do that in real life, but really, he pitched really good besides those two games. So you'd lose those two games, but he'd give you a really good shot those other, I think, 13 or 14 games he started. So, you know, so I liked that deal a lot for the Tigers. And I pretty much liked it for every team. The Tigers, one of their scouting guys recently went over to Arizona. So I think Laba can end up helping Arizona. We'll see what Ray does. I'm not sure how well he can help them. But,
yeah, I was never big on Robbie Ray.
I think the Arizona got the worst.
I think Dombrowski had, well, what we say, he had a little bit of a man crush on him, but when he traded for him, because that was almost like the main point of that deal. I mean,
yeah, it was almost like you got two other guys who could be spare parts and help with the team, and Lombardozzi could be a, you know, backup, and Kroll could maybe be a guy who helped out of the pen, but they definitely weren't the main selling points for getting Fister.
So, well, I think he made up for it. I mean, he did what he could to salvage Robbie Ray. Shipped him off and got Shane Green for
him.
Yeah,
and I think Leyba, I think he's going to come up with Arizona and the fans will like him. I think each team got at least one good player in the deal. So I like that trade. Okay, so the winter meetings happened. So we're going to flash forward with the Tigers because we're going to do all the Tigers moves. And then I'm going to recap a few other ones for you. And then we got some of them I'm going to do on the site because this segment is going to take 10 years if we did all of them. We'll just go over the big ones. But the Tigers were quiet. A lot of people were complaining. Man, is David Dombrowski going to make a move? Is he going to make a move? So there's been a long rumor. Jeez, a very long rumor. I remember I heard this in like the end of October before the World Series was even over. The Red Sox came out and were like, we don't, you know, we're probably going to trade Yoenis. He's uncoachable. And yeah, Yoenis kind of, you know, goes to his own drum. But I woke up and saw that the Tigers had acquired Yoenis Cespedes for Rick Porcello yesterday. And that was a really, you know, I was pretty excited. The Tigers got Gabe Speier. And I think he's a guy you're going to have to watch because he's 19. But I think he could potentially have an impact. It's really early to tell, but he was really impressive. He was a 19th round pick in 2013, so he's kind of more under the radar guy, but it doesn't mean anything. I think they're taking a little bit of a chance on him, but I think he could reward them. And then they got Alex Wilson in the deal for Porcello with Cespedes, and Wilson could end up helping out of the bullpen. I like, you know, that Dombrowski wanted Wilson. You got to get, the way to build a bullpen is, you know, you got to sign a bunch of guys and you got to ask for spare parts like that in trades. Because these guys could end up really helping. Bullpen guys are the most unpredictable, I think, in baseball to predict success and whatnot. They change so often. I mean, the only established closers for, like, more than 3 years are Greg Holland and Kimbrel that I can think of. And Kimbrel's the only one in the past 5 years that I can think of that's been a closer really good for a long time. So you know, the bullpen's definitely a thing you got to piece together every year. And I think people are not liking this, but I think that Wilson's just a good acquisition. The Tigers might sign some guys for cheap. If Hanrahan's healthy, Rondon gets healthy, the Tigers are looking at an average bullpen almost now. So I liked Wilson being included in that deal. He did good in his cup of coffee. He's 28 from Saudi Arabia. That's an interesting place of birth for a baseball player, but, you know, I like the deal. And then the big guy with Cespedes, and it, you know, Cespedes only had a .301 on base percentage, and I'm a big on base percentage truther, I guess you could say. That's one of my favorite offensive stats, you know, because I like the walk and such. And Cespedes only had a .301 on base, and he's not ever been a real, like, he's probably only going to hit 270, 280, but a lot of people have said they think he's going to have a career year, so maybe he'll have a higher on base and stuff this year. But even despite that on base and every negative thing, his power is amazing. He could steal some bases for the Tigers. I know they've been more aggressive. He stole 16 his rookie year, but he hasn't stolen more than 10 since. But who knows? He might steal 10 for him this year, and they could be big. The Tigers can take speed any way they get it. But Cespedes was a 4 win player last year. His WAR was 4.1, even despite that base percentage. So I like Cespedes. And then the non-sabermetric part of it, just the baseball part of it, I think Cespedes is a good player. He's not going to get bothered by much. And it gives the Tigers a scary part of the lineup. I don't know how they're going to do the lineup exactly, because there's a lot of different options. But at some point, you're going to have to go through Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez, Yoenis Cespedes, J.D. Martinez. And Nick Castellanos didn't have such a great year last year, but he's only getting better. I think Nick is going to be really good, especially if he improves his third base defense. But hitting-wise, I think Castellanos is a stud, and I think this next year is going to get even better. I don't think the sophomore slump is going to exist for him. I think he's going to continue to get better and climb up and be really good by his third or fourth year. So you're getting that. Plus, Ian Kinsler somewhere in the mix. He might not be consecutive with those five guys, but you got Kinsler in there too. And then Avila, I like because he gets on base. So you got seven guys who could really be a threat for a homer or to get on base, you know, and that's really, really good in the lineup. Iglesias might not have the best offensive year, but it takes a lot of pressure off of him. And the Tigers now have two Cubans for the first time since 2013, a long time, I know, with Brian Pena and Iglesias. But I think this takes pressure off of Iglesias, and I like this deal for the Tigers. Do you have a take on it before I get in the Simone deal?
I wasn't huge on this deal. You know, Nick texted me. I was out and about, and he texted me. And I wasn't, you know, he can tell you I wasn't huge on the deal. Then I got thinking, yeah, I wasn't huge on the deal because I like Porcello. I think he was just getting into what he was going to be for the rest of his career with his year last year. And I thought he was a good young pitcher to have. And we had him, you know, a good addition to our team. But we got Cespedes, who, looking at his stats, he's had 100 RBIs the last few years. And he's going to hit 20 homers for us. And that's a thing that I like to see.
Yeah. On Porcello, a lot of people were expecting him to fully regress because he out his fielding independent pitching, which is a big stats kind of like on base percentage, you know, because ERA can be like batting average sometimes. You can get lucky, I guess. But, you know, Porcello, because he's not a big strikeout pitcher, his FIP was not so great, but he kind of underperformed the last few years because his FIP was actually, I think, better than his ERA. And then last year, he almost overperformed. He, you know, he went to a 3-4 ERA he ended up with. And Porcello, I think he's somewhere in the middle. I think Fenway might hurt him a little bit, but I think in his career, he's going to be like a 350, 360 ERA pitcher. He's never going to strike out a ton of guys, but he can be a solid 3 or 4. Well, on your average, you know, decent team, like on an 85-91 team, I think he's a good 3-starter, but on a really good team, maybe a 4-starter. But Porcello needs a defense behind him, and I think Boston's going to be a little bit of a struggle for him because, I mean, heck, they're going to have Hanley Ramirez in left field, so that might be a little rough on Porcello. So he might have a little bit of a rough year, but regardless, he's going to hit free agency and get a lot of money because he's young and he's good, and he might be able to get two decent contracts out of free agency because he started so young. But Porcello, definitely, he did great for the Tigers. I'm thankful for his time here. I enjoyed watching him pitch. He was one of my favorite players. I'd say he was on my top 10 for sure of guys I've watched over the past few years. I liked rooting for him pitching, and I remember him coming up. He's one of the, you know, he's a really good rookie in 2009, one of the good pitchers for us consistently over the past 5 years. Well, not consistently good, but because he had a few rough years in 2011, and 12 was in his best year, but the last 2 years he's been pretty good, I think, overall for us. So I like Porcello, and I'm going to miss him, but I like the steal for the Tigers. Now, the Tigers, of course, they're going to have 4 starters, so they had to go out, and John Morosi of Fox Sports was reporting a Reds starting pitcher, so I'm going to take you through what I was going through. I'm going, ooh, Johnny Cueto, and then some fake Ken Rosenthal put out there that Johnny Cueto was going to the Tigers, but and people didn't realize it was fake, so for a minute there, I read that, and I was like, oh, cool, and then I was like, wait, that's a fake account. So then I was thinking, well, hopefully it's Latos, and if not, I'll take Mike Leake. Anybody but Alfredo Simon is what I was thinking. And it came out Latos was going to the Marlins, so I was process of elimination. It's probably not going to be Cueto, and it's obviously not going to be Latos, so I'm hoping Leake, but it comes out it's Simon. And Simon, he had a really fluky start last year, and maybe he outperformed himself a little bit. He just was pitching his top game. But he's 34, and he had a really good first half, a horrendous second half. So if he ends up starting, I think he's the Tigers' definite 5 guy. And I didn't like that deal as much. Sure, Suarez and Crawford weren't the greatest pieces in the world, but I think you could have got more for him. But the thing about this is, my conspiracy theory here is, everybody thinks we're out on Scherzer around here. Well, not everybody, but a majority of the people, I'd say, because he's begging for a lot of money. But I think Scherzer's going to be one of those guys who ends up being a free agent at the end of January, and I think him and the Tigers are going to come together for a reunion. I think Dombrowski almost has a game plan to try to get him, and if we get Scherzer back, we're going to move Simone to the bullpen. Because if you look, Simone is good out of the bullpen, really good. I would take Simone out of the bullpen. You could arguably have a really good 7-8, and I was telling Austin last night, if you combination of him, Soria, and if Rondon comes back, or even Albuquerque, you could figure it out. Because I don't think Nathan's going to last as closer. I think he's reached the end of his career. He had a great career, but I think he's just losing his stuff, and he's not going to be as good. I think he's going to lose the opportunity in training. But Simone could really, really be a good late-inning reliever for the Tigers. And at that point, he'd almost be worth Suarez and Crawford, because the Tigers need somebody like that to go with Soria, who I think is going to end up doing a lot better than he did for us the second half for the whole year next year. And I think Albuquerque was really underrated, and he's going to have a good year. And if Rondon comes back healthy, Hanran comes healthy, you have Wilson, maybe Kroll starts to reach his potential. You all of a sudden have a pretty good bullpen with Simone, and Scherzer can be your ace. Then you go to Price, Verlander, Anibal, and Green, and that's your rotation. But if not Simone, you know, he's a 5-starter, and I think he'll be like worth maybe a little over 1 win this year as far as WAR, if I had to predict it, just looking at his numbers and from what I've seen in pitch and stuff, and just kind of putting it in my head and just kind of giving an estimate, not any real formula, I'd say like a 1-2-1-3 WAR starting-wise. I think he could provide a lot more value out of the bullpen. So we'll have to see. So obviously that deal, I'd give the edge to the Reds if Simone's a starter, and I'd give the edge to the Tigers if he's a reliever. Nobody gets a huge edge. I think Suarez could help the Reds out some, but Crawford probably will be like a long reliever. So, like I said, the Tigers so far this offseason, though, with all those moves, I think they've only improved like a win or two. I think they're like a 92-win team now. People were saying they got worse, but I don't see how they would have gotten worse. The rotation got a little bit worse, but the offense is scarier, in my opinion, now. You needed that extra bat, and right-handed power is hard to find, so the Tigers have a really valuable lineup, too. And I would wait to sign Yoenis to an extension, too. I'd see how he does this year, adding that on. But so far, I think the Tigers' offseason improves them by a win or two, but if they get Scherzer, they hit it out of the ballpark this offseason, I think. I think it comes down to what Max does. It's either kind of an above-average offseason or a home run grand slam type offseason
for Scherzer. And I mean, I think Scherzer, there's a good possibility he comes back. I mean, I'm not sure if Dombrowski's ever done something like this before where he comes out and says, we're not pursuing Scherzer, but...
He's never said that about a guy who's re-signed, but the day before we signed Prince, we weren't in on Prince. I don't know if you remember that.
But which is kind of funny, but... and then, like, a couple hours later, Scherzer's agent comes out, Scott Boras comes out and says, oh yeah, Scherzer's keeping the eye out, or he's keeping the door open for Detroit, is what he said.
Yeah, and he said he wanted like 8 years of $216 million from the Yankees, but
I don't think he's going to get 8 years.
I think that $200 million is not going to happen. Yeah, I think he's going to sign for somewhere in the neighborhood of $180 million, and I think the Tigers will jump all over it. Mike Ilitch is going to go, oh yeah, and he'll sign him to a 6 or 7 year deal. I think if he gets $180 million or like a little bit above it, it'll be 7 years, but if it's a little bit less, it might be 6. But I think we're going to end up re-signing him. That's my prediction.
I think we're going to end up re-signing him. I think he's going to want to come back to Detroit. But I also don't think that he's going to get that much. I disagree there.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get that much from anybody.
No, I don't even think he's going to get what you're saying in the ballpark. I think he's going to get...
I think he'll get more than 160.
Six years. I think he's going to get 6 years, 165.
165. All right. So... I think he gets at least 170.
Those are the main Tigers moves. I think Nick has a few more moves he wants to recap.
Yeah, we'll just do a few because I'm gonna have to start writing up for our site some of the moves with my opinions on them, and maybe I can get Austin's. But so the first, we're gonna go over three main teams, I guess. The Blue Jays, you know, they made a pretty big trade. They got Josh Donaldson the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. They ended up trading a bunch of minor leaguers, Toronto did, and Brett Laurie to Oakland. And I think Brett Laurie's still yet to break out. I'm still pretty high on Brett Laurie. I've always liked him, and I think he's going to break out. So if those prospects work out, Oakland, it's almost not as big of a loss as people make it out to be. And I think Donaldson's good. He's, you know, WAR favors him. A lot of the, sabermetrical stats, which I like, favor him. And I like Donaldson, but I still think he's a bit overrated. He's really good defensively, but I think the turf's going to hurt him a little bit, and I think he's going to almost regress a little bit. And I think this year he might hit for a little bit lower average, but a little bit more power, because Toronto's going to be a place where you're going to try to hit for power. So I think those could be problems for Donaldson. His swing's a lot like Jose Bautista's, so I mean, I almost think that he'll be the third base version of Jose Bautista these next few years. He'll be, you know, pretty respected defensively. I'm not sure how good Bautista is overall defensively, but I know Bautista has a good arm. And Donaldson's pretty good defensively, but I think, like I said, the turf might hurt him. And I think he's going to be like a 250 hitter, maybe like a 320 on base, and he'll hit a lot of homers. I think that's what he's going to do for Toronto. So overall, that deal, I think the Blue Jays might have got a minor edge in it, but I still think Lurie's going to be pretty good. So I think the Blue Jays, they're really going for it this year. And that AL East is kind of wide open because the Yankees are kind of stuck in the middle. The Red Sox lost out on the big free agents, and the Orioles might not repeat because they lost three of their key players. So, and the Rays, I still like the Rays, but that division's really up for grabs. So I like Donaldson as an addition for the Blue Jays. And then one other big thing happened at the winter meetings, besides all the trades, which I'm going to get into. John Lester signed with the Cubs, which is a pretty big deal, and he was the first domino to fall. He didn't go back to the Red Sox. And I think the Cubs now have an ace. And I think the Cubs, actually this year, they're going to take a major step in the right direction. And I think by next year at least, maybe even this year, they'll be a playoff team. Those youngsters got to help them out. If I were the Cubs, I would trade Baez. I would trade Baez for another arm. But I like the Cubs' rotation now. It's pretty solid. And I think Lester isn't going to waste, you know, his next 2 years there and then get worse. I think that was a good signing for the Cubs overall. And I don't think Wrigley's going to affect him. I think it's a good fit overall. I like Lester there. I think that's a huge addition to the Cubs. They needed that ace pitcher, and they finally got him.
I think that's a good signing for the Cubs, even if they only get three good years out of Lester in that deal.
Yeah.
Because if they can make the playoffs next year and then maybe strike for, you know, a divisional series win, I think it's worth it in that. And I think he's a good clubhouse guy to have around, too. He's a veteran. And I think he can help kind of get these young guys going, heading in the right direction to play Major League Ball.
All right, and then, you know, living in the Detroit area, the other Chicago team, the Southsiders, the White Sox made some moves. I know a lot of people were freaking out the Tigers need to answer them, but I still don't think the White Sox are going to be that good, and I didn't think the Tigers needed to answer them. And the Tigers kind of answered them, but they did their own thing still, which I think was the right plan of action for the Tigers to, you know, defend their four straight Central titles. But the White Sox got Samardzija, who I think he's had a really good year, and I've always liked Samardzija, but I think he's going to regress a little bit too. I know I'm on this regress train with Purcell and Donaldson and now Samardzija, but I think he's going to not be so good. Not so good. Let me rephrase that. Not as good as he's been. I think he's still going to be a solid number two. But I don't think their 1-3 competes with the Tigers, and their 4-5 is just up in the air as the Tigers. I think the Tigers' 4-5 is actually better. Dank's had a really bad year because he gives them a rotation of Sale, Samardzija, Quintana, Danks, and then maybe like Eric Johnson or someone else. I don't know if I'm leaving someone out, but their five's kind of, I think, almost like a battle right now. But, you know, I still don't like the rotation. And then they went and they finalized the Adam LaRoche deal, which I think we talked about last show. And I like that deal for them, but their middle of the lineup now is Abreu, Garcia, and LaRoche. I think they'll be their 3-4-5. But outside of that, I don't think they've got any really like awesome hitters coming up. So I don't think the White Sox are going to be more than like a 75-77 win team this next year. They got David Robertson too, and that'll be huge. I think he might probably be their best pickup, I think, because he'll be able to close those games out because they didn't have a really established closer last year. And, you know, closers, people say, is a silly concept, but you want to have a good closer because blown saves are a big deal. You don't want to blow games that you're winning or could win, you know, late in the game.
If you're a Tigers fan, you feel that pain.
Yeah, and Robertson's going to be huge for that. So I think he's almost their biggest pickup, and I think that's where the majority of their newfound wins will be. But they might reach 500, but I'm still not sold unless they make another big move to their, like another few big additions to their lineup, or somebody breaks out like Carlos Sanchez will and Adam Eaton really break out next year and give them a good 1-2, and they might get one more hitter, and then they got a good 1-6. But yeah, I'm not sure, but honestly, the White Sox got the edge in the Samardzija deal because they only had to give up Fegley and Semien. I don't know how to say his name, Marcus. He's a shortstop for them, and he got one Rookie of the Year vote for Sporting News, but he was horrible. There was a joke going around that his mom voted for him in the Sporting News Rookie of the Year because nobody knew I got the vote. But I don't think he's that great. And Fagley's like a backup catcher. I don't even know why they wanted him. So the A's, I think, struck out on that trade. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was all the moves that the Dodgers have made. First off, they went and they got, they traded D. Gordon and Dan Herod, which I think was good. They got Andrew Heaney and a bunch, and Chris Hatcher and Austin Barnes, and I think those three are really good. But Andrew Heaney, he ended up getting traded to the Angels later that night for Howie Kendrick, and he actually, it was pretty funny, he tweeted, wow, thanks for the memories. It was such a great time in this historic organization, referring to the Dodgers as a joke, because he was with them for a total of maybe 5 hours.
Yeah, it was 5 hours.
Yeah, so
not even sure he made it to LA.
But I like that deal for both sides. Kendrick is going to be really good for the Dodgers. They traded Heaney for Kendrick. And Heaney, I think, is going to... He's impressed me along the way, so I think the Angels got a pretty good starter, and that was one of the Angels' weak spots last year, when Shoemaker got kind of banged up at the end of the year, and Richards tore his ACL. They were pretty much left with Jared Weaver as their only good starter for the playoffs, and once Weaver got defeated in a really close game one, they're kind of down for the count. They were in for it after that, so...
Yeah, I think the emergence of Richards is, as well as their really weak schedule in the later part of the year, you know, kind of made them seem like a better team than they were.
Yeah, so I like the move for the Angels, though. Overall, I don't know how they're going to replace Kendrick. I'm not sure if they have a second baseman behind him. I'm kind of blanking on that. But I like the deal for both sides because they did get an established arm even though they gave up Kendrick. And the Dodgers also made two other moves. They traded for Jimmy Rollins, and it was just a bunch of prospects. I think Zach Lee might be one of the guys that ends up going, and I think that'll be a good pickup for the Phillies. But Rollins is a good stopgap until Seager comes up. I kept saying, you know, the Dodgers should let Hanley go because they have the two Cubans, Guerrero, and then I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. He's got a really long last name. His name's like Arubi. I don't know. I have to figure out how to pronounce it. I know what it is when I see it. I know who he is, but I just can't pronounce the name. So, you know, I said they can stick with them and then have D. Gordon as their second baseman and have those guys as shortstop until Seager comes up. But instead they'll go with Kendrick and Rollins until Seager comes up. And I like that idea for the Dodgers. They got some other parts along the way too, some other prospects, and like guys like Chris Hatcher who can help out of the bullpen this next year. So I like what Friedman's doing in LA. And then they also traded Matt Kemp to the Padres. Of course, they still don't have a spot for Jack Peterson, so I mean they could afford it. And they got Grandal, who's an upgrade from AJ Ellis, and I think a change of scenery is good for Grandal. So now they got a good catcher too, and they also got Wieland, who's a good prospect, a starting prospect. And I think they're going to, I think, you know, Kemp's going to, and I think the Padres still got the edge in that deal, though. I think Kemp's going to do okay in San Diego, but his hitting numbers aren't going to be as good. But Kemp's still pretty much an MVP candidate. Adrian Gonzalez still hit well in San Diego. I think Kemp will be able to do that because they're just really both really talented. Maybe not as well as Gonzalez did, but I think Kemp's going to be really good for him. And then getting back to the Angels real quick, it looks like maybe Taylor Lindsay. I don't know if they might have traded him. I don't know. The Angels are going to have a little bit of a problem at second base. I didn't really divulge into that because I was so excited they got Heaney. But the Angels are going to have to figure out a second baseman. I'm pretty sure they might. I don't know if they still have Lindsay or not, because when they traded for Houston Street, he might have went to San Diego is what I'm thinking. I don't remember the details of that trade. But we'll have to end up seeing. So anyways, the Angels will figure out something for second base. They're going to have an inexperienced second baseman. But Heaney is a good pickup. And I'm sure the Angels will figure out something. They can sign a free agent or have somebody come up. So all around the Angels, I think, went out there too. I think that was a good deal for both sides. So that's going to wrap it up. We'll have to do some of the other moves on our website. So the winter meetings were definitely hectic. A lot of things happened. It was very fun to follow the past 3 days. So we're going to move into either some college football or hockey next, I think. So. Here we go.
So I know on one of our older podcasts, we let off talking about the Red Wings. The Red Wings were looking good the preseason, so I wanted to talk a little bit about them and how they were going to start the season healthy this year. So I was pretty excited, and then right now, most Red Wings fans are pretty excited also. Mike Babcock, head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, was quoted last night as saying, "This is the best team we've had since probably 09. Not necessarily point-wise, but direction-wise." And I have to agree with that statement. Direction-wise, he's talking about players that are going in the right direction, you know, playing well, and he mentioned something about that's what good teams have, you know, like internal competition between the players. This year they made a lot of transactions, bringing players up from Grand Rapids, setting people down, mostly on the defensive side, although Peter Mrazek, my favorite goalie in the organization, is he is battling for that second goalie spot on the roster. So they're looking really good. They're 17 wins, 6 losses, and 6 overtime losses on the season, 40 points. They're second place in the NHL, also second place in the Eastern Conference. And they're on pace for 113 points as of last night, which would be their best total since they won the President's Trophy in 07 and won the Stanley Cup that year. So definitely looking like a good team this year. One major thing is the injuries from last year aren't repeating themselves. Last year, I know Pavel and Zetterberg are arguably our two best players. Each missed around 40 games. Johan Franzen missed some games. Our backup goalie, Gustafsson, missed around 20 games. And our defense was a mess. So, this article also says, it's a Yahoo Sports article, and it says, the Wings only had both Datsyuk and Zetterberg in the lineup 22 times last year. So that's a big thing. So I'm definitely excited about the rest of the season. I hope my boy Peter Mrazek gets some starts in goal. Hopefully he can make it at least up to the second spot. He won't be starting a lot. Neither will Gustafsson, though. Because the emergence of Jimmy Howard, I mean, Jimmy Howard's established in the NFL. Jimmy Howard's established in the NHL. And but he's definitely emerging as a different type of goalie this year. He's more of a, you know, he's been known as like a butterfly goalie. Which, unless you're really into hockey, you might not know what that means. But this year he's been playing more of like a hybrid between butterfly and stand-up. So that's working out good for him. He's playing well. He's won a lot of games at home, and that's what you got to do in the NHL. You got to win games at home. So, really excited. I know the few hockey fans we have that might be listening to the podcast are excited as well. And once again, if you'd like to talk hockey or anything else we've mentioned on this podcast, our Twitter is always open. We're on it a lot. So, our Twitter is at NSF Sports Report. If you'd like to contact us, follow us. We'll follow you back. You can DM us or ask us questions just by tweeting at us. We'll get back to you as soon as possible. That's going to wrap it up for my little talk on the NHL. We're going to end the podcast this week by talking about our opinions on the college football playoff, you know, the 14 playoff. We talked about it last week, the system and our predictions, but the results are in, and most people aren't very happy. You know, unless your team's in the playoff, you're not very happy with how it turned out.
So. Yeah, I think they got it right. It was number one is going to be Alabama, number two, Oregon, number three will be Florida State, and number four will be Ohio State.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break real quick, and then we'll move on into that. All right, so as Nick told you in the transition to this segment, number one in the college football playoff is?
Alabama. Number two is Oregon. Number three is Florida State. Number four is Ohio State. Now, before I get into my predictions and such, I'm going to say three things. One, they got it right. Number two, they should have an eight-team playoff, I think, because I think Baylor and TCU both deserved a chance. And there's a couple, like Michigan State and Mississippi State, I think they both deserve a chance. The SEC, like I say, it's kind of overrated, but it's still the best conference, and they deserve to have a second team represented. And I think Michigan State would have been a decent 8 team to put in there. Michigan State showed last year that they can win big games when they won the Rose Bowl. So I think 8 teams wouldn't hurt. And number 3, I think Florida State should have been number 1, despite their close games, because after all, they're the only team that hasn't lost. I would rather win 12 close games than win 11 blowouts and lose a game. Because winning's winning. I mean, even if it's lucky sometimes, you know, that's just the way sports are. You know, they're not always, I guess, fair, I guess, in that principle, like maybe mathematical way. So, you know, because it's just sports. But so I think Florida State should have been number 1. Then I would add Bama 2, Oregon 3, and Iowa State 4. And maybe even Oregon 2. I don't know. I might have kept them and had Bama 3. But I'm going to do the picks real quick, my picks. I'm going to go ahead and take Alabama over Ohio State, but I'm going to take Florida State over Oregon. I'm going to take Florida State over Alabama. I know I might be wrong on this, but I'm just going to go out and win. Jameis Winston's won a lot of big games, and I know the team isn't the same team quite as it was last year, but I think they got to be one of the favorites going in. But it, certainly Oregon looks like the best team going in there. These are just predictions. It's just throwing darts at a dartboard. It's really hard to predict anything. Really, so I mean, I think Oregon looks like the best team going in there, but Florida State, I'm going to predict to win. But I think they got it right. I think Ohio State deserves it. They beat a Wisconsin team pretty good. So that's my take on it. So you can wrap up the show with your opinions.
Well, I think the Ohio State definitely had a convincing win. But, and I've heard from a lot of people that they think that they needed to do this in order to win or to make it in. But I think all they had to do was win the game. And win the game by a good amount. I mean, I didn't watch the whole game, but I watched, like, they call it a condensed game. And they really just ran up the score. I don't think they played as well as the score showed. I mean, they did shut them out, and I think a shutout was convincing enough. But towards the end of the game, when most people run the ball, they just wanted to run up the score. And I think that was, I mean, it's college football. We're not going to get into sportsmanship because it's competitive, especially when you're trying to make the playoff system. But I just don't think it was as convincing as the scoreboard looked to be. But I do think they got it right. Unfortunately, I'm a Baylor fan, so there's a little bit of bias that goes into that. But I think Baylor is the all-around agreed to be the 5 seed. They beat TCU head-to-head, so I think that gives them the edge there. And yeah, so I think they got it right. My picks, Alabama over Ohio State and Florida State over Oregon. And I think Alabama's going to win the national championship once again.
All right. And then just one thing before we wrap up the show. Taylor Lindsay is, in fact, on the San Diego Padres. I looked at the name because I was looking at the handbook, and I went, wait, he got traded for Houston Street. And sure enough, I was right. So I think
the Angels are in trouble.
So the Angels, they need to sign somebody. I think they'll figure it out. They're a contending team. They're going to spend a little bit of money to sign a guy to a one-year deal or something. So I think that's going to wrap up the show this week. Thank you for listening. Follow us, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes. And we hope that you have a good next week, and we'll talk to you really soon, guys.
We are doing one last thing. We are doing a giveaway on Twitter, so I've decided to open this up to Twitter and on iTunes. If you subscribe and rate us on iTunes, take a screenshot of it, send it to our email, which is...
Or tweet us.
Or tweet it at us. Either way, that'll count as an entry. We will be doing the giveaway at 500 followers. So I think we're about 175 away still. So need to help get us there. Retweet our stuff, you know. If you don't follow us yet, do it. NSF Sports Report. Email us. We'll give you a shout out on the show. And we'll say this. If you email us, follow us, or subscribe and rate us, all three of those will give you an entry to the giveaway. And it's a pretty neat thing. So give you a hint. It has to do with college football. So if you like college football, and especially if you live in Michigan, you'll like it a lot more. But it's a nice college football. little piece of memorabilia. So just do that, and we'd like to thank you for listening to our podcast, and have a nice week, guys.